Hello everybody, my name is On, and this is On's Gotta Talk for Thursday, 19th of October, 2023. In this week's episode, we're going to talk a bit about the Oppo Find N3 series, the Find N3 and N3 Flip, and also the OnePlus Open, which is based on the Find N3. Xiaomi is planning a successor to MIUI, which is their famous skin of Android. Apple has released or really launched a new version of the Apple Pencil. It charges over USB-C and much, much more. So without further ado, let's get rolling, shall we? Before we start, we will observe a moment of silence for the victims of the Gaza hospital bombing and all those in Gaza who've been affected by the Israel-Palestine war. It's been a difficult past couple of days given what's been happening in this part of the world, but primarily for the Palestinian people, I urge you to keep them in your thoughts and prayers, but also to donate generously to relief efforts to end their suffering. All the links to all the main charities are in the show notes, so you can go check them out if you're listening already, and you can go and donate. But yeah, thank you very much, and on to our episode. All right. Oppo has revealed the Find N3 and N3 Flip in an event in Singapore earlier today, sort of being their answer to Samsung's Galaxy Z foldables, the Z Flip 5 and Fold 5. Now, the camera focus brand has released these phones already in the Chinese market, but what we have here is the global variant. The Find N3 features a 6.31-inch outer AMOLED display with a resolution of 2484 by 1116, so it's on the outside it's a regular phone aspect ratio, so I think 20 to 10 aspect ratio, so the normal sort of dimension of an actual phone, so you won't really be opening the inner display that often. You wouldn't really need to actually, because the you might want to, because the Find N3 generally is rated for 1 million is rated essentially is durable up to 1 million folds before it sort of cracks, and that's been tested by two TUV Ryland 1 million folds, that's according to the press release here, and that's far beyond obviously what's out there. So I think Samsung's foldables have been rated to like 5,000 folds before the screen breaks, so that's pretty strong. But you won't, as I said, with the large hour display, you won't really be needing to open the inner display that often. However, on the inside, you get a 7.82-inch 2440x2268 resolution AMOLED display with the same refresh rate. Oh, I forgot to mention that both the outer and inner display will come with adaptive 120Hz refresh rate and 2800 nits of brightness, so these are quite snappy and bright displays, and you can consume a lot of content. You get HDR on these bad boys. It's pretty good in a way. Other than that, really, you get the Snapdragon 8 Gen 2 chip, 16GB of LPDDR5X RAM, 512GB of storage. That's basically one spec you'll get, and also there's a 1TB variant, but that's only for the Chinese market. They have only mentioned the half a terabyte version, the 512GB variant, that'll be for the global version pretty much. 4805mAh battery, 67W fast charging, weighs 239g, so it's quite light. It's not a chunky boy compared to, say, the Pixel Fold or the Galaxy Z Fold 5, and comes in four colorways. So you get, so like there are two colorways that sort of come in a matte sort of glass finish, and there's two that come in a faux pas leather finish, vegan leather finish, so that's pretty cool in a way. But really, what makes the Find N3 unique is the hinge in question, also the cameras. First is the hinge, and according to the press release, this features the third generation Flexion hinge, which again lies at the core of the Find N3's thin and light body. And again, it's considerably smaller than the previous generation Find N2. It's more durable. It has IPX4 splash resistance, so it's not durable for the foldable won't be protected from dust, but it can handle some splashes. And as I said earlier, it can withstand 1 million folds because it's been tested by TUV Rhineland for this for that durability. So that's pretty impressive in a way. And apparently it has less than 100 parts. Now that's for the OnePlus Fold, spoiler alert. Both the OnePlus Open and the Find N3 sort of are similar. They're sort of the same phone with a different name, sort of. And the OnePlus, though, I was watching the launch event, and they mentioned how it has less than 100 parts on the foldable, so it's quite durable. And it has a whole bunch of, it has different metals in it. I can't remember off the top of my head, but they'd mentioned the use of zirconium carbon fiber, so it's quite a durable hinge, and it seems like they've done a lot more innovation in that department compared to Samsung. But again, Samsung obviously looking for mass production, so I'm not surprised that they did not really go out and build a redefined hinge. It would have been risky in a way, but Oppo decided to pass on some innovations to consumers. But I think this is the one thing you will definitely notice with these Chinese foldables, whether you look at the Honor and the and Xiaomi and also Oppo and Vivo and OnePlus, is that what you're looking at really is that they're designing the phones to just kind of be like your everyday flagship phones with an extra screen. You get a larger inner display, of course, but also with more durable hinges, with full flagship specs. They're not really cutting corners here, and I think that's pretty good in a way. Speaking of which, with the cameras, according to Oppo, you get three sensors on the back. You get two sensors on the inner and outer display. They're kind of identical. You can take some crispy selfies on both the inside and the outside with those punch hole notch front-facing cameras. On the outside, this is where it's quite impressive. The triple camera array on the rear covers three focal length, 14mm, 24mm, and of course 70mm. Now this feature, the main sensor is a 48 megapixel main Sony Leica T808 sensor, dual layer stacked CMOS camera sensor. You can call it a CMOS sensor that can carry more light, and you get reduced noise, superior dynamic range, and again a lot more detail, of course, naturally, with all that engineering. So that's pretty impressive in a way. Along with that, you have a 48 megapixel ultrawide camera that's sort of a second sensor next to the main, and also a 64 megapixel periscope telephoto camera, allowing you to take incredible detail shots, whether it is macro or zoom shots. So that's pretty impressive in its own right. The periscope camera has a f2.6 aperture and 64 megapixels, in case you missed it. So that's pretty cool in a way. Just because it's a foldable doesn't mean it you can't take some great photos. You can definitely take some high quality photos and some cinematic videos from this bad boy. So you can do it all on the Find N3, which is pretty cool in a way. And also you get enhanced portrait mode thanks to Hasselblad, which is sort of bringing its own sort of modes and settings, so that's pretty cool in a way. And also Oppo has its own computational photography engine, so again, that means these sensors, you can definitely pump out some pretty quality photos and videos from this bad boy, so that's pretty cool in a way. But yeah, Oppo also showed off the Find N3 Flip, and it'll cost around $1,000 when it launches in Singapore, so it's sort of similarly priced to Galaxy Z Flip 5, and the same story sort of for the Find N3, kind of priced similarly with the Z Fold 5. And as for pricing and availability, the Find N3 will set you back $2,399 Singaporean dollars, so that's around $1,700, so that's slightly less than the Samsung we're using as a reference, slightly less expensive than Samsung by like $100, give or take, or $60 more or less. And the Flip will set you back $1,499 Singaporean dollars. That's about around $1,000 more or less. And you can pre-order it tomorrow. By the time I'm recording it, you can pre-order it sort of now. So that's pretty cool in a way. And this sounds like a pretty good challenger to the Galaxy Z Fold and Z Flip 5, pretty much. Moving on, let's talk about the OnePlus Open. Now, I don't really have much to talk about with the OnePlus. It also was revealed today in an event in India. It was pretty cool. I watched the launch event a little bit, so I kind of know what I'm going at here. It's basically the global variant or more or less you could say the American variant of the Oppo Find N3. And why I say the American variant, because OnePlus sells their phones in the US, and this one will be available in the US, Europe, India, and all the usual markets where OnePlus sells their phones. And I think that's a significant thing to note, really. That is basically the American version of the Oppo Find N3. And Oppo doesn't sell their phones in the US just yet, but OnePlus does sell their phones in the US, and you can technically say that it's basically OnePlus is now also the American Oppo, because as I said, Oppo doesn't sell phones stateside. So yeah, so you live in America, you really want the Oppo Find N3, you might as well look at the OnePlus Open. It's probably a good idea in a way. So yeah, it's sort of the global or American variant of the Find N3. I've talked already about the specs of the Find N3 earlier. Snapdragon 8 Gen 2, the large outer display that's like a regular phone. On the inside, a pretty decently big inner display. The triple camera setup, the 48 megapixel main, 48 megapixel ultrawide, 64 megapixel telephoto. Same hinge, same screens, same 8 Gen 2 processor, and even same software functions. For example, the 15-inch virtual screen is known as the Open Canvas. The key difference really is pricing. You get a wall adapter included really in the box, and well, Oxygen OS, which is kind of based on ColorOS from Oppo. The OnePlus Open is a decently solid contender to the Galaxy Z Fold 5 and is priced at 1799 euros, so that's 1800 euros before taxes, around 1600 British quid or 1599 pounds, and most importantly for the folks in the US, 1699 roughly, so $1,700. Seems like OnePlus is settling on fighting with Samsung for the crown. Xiaomi announced on X and Weibo on Tuesday that it'll be launching a new OS that will power, they'll quote, power its smartphones and other devices going forward, and will be replacing MIUI, which has been its skin, which really has been their own skin of Android. The new OS is called Hyper OS, unsurprisingly, and will be based on Android and their sort of their own Wella architecture system, if you want to call that software architecture. So they have some components, and Android will still be like a big part of this OS. HyperOS will be released with the Xiaomi 14 series, which will be announced by the end of this year, and so it'll be announced by the end of this month, apparently, based on what I read online. From the looks of it, it's basically Xiaomi creating a fresher, more optimized operating system, which will make their devices more capable and slick, almost like Samsung's One UI and Huawei's Harmony OS. I'd say this is like the two main direct comparison. Forget iOS, forget Apple. You can throw that out of the bin, really. Really, this is a Xiaomi sort of taking a page out of Samsung and Huawei and what they've been doing with their software. But it's helped those two companies big time, One UI and Harmony, which has made a huge difference with the software experience. So I'm not surprised that Xiaomi is going ahead with this in a way. In fact, we've also gotten leaks of what could be the first version of HyperOS. From the pictures I've seen online on X, it looks like a slightly modified version of MIUI 14, but the control center comes with more settings, and that's where the integration part comes in. Again, an awful lot like what Samsung and Huawei are doing with their own integrations. Also, nothing to a degree, more or less, along with a more customizable lock screen and widgets, but that will sort of be coming with Android 15. Are we on Android 14 or Android 15? I think Android 15, yeah, the latest version of Android, as I'll call it. You'll be getting the lock screen updates and widgets and all. Whether or not there's anything new with HyperOS, or it's basically just a new coat of paint on MIUI, we gotta appreciate that Xiaomi has realized that the software has really been lacking, and it's kind of been underwhelming all this time, all these years really, and has actually worked on a fresh new OS, or a new sort of skin that will drive their devices, really. But speaking of which, they're getting ready to release their first electric vehicle very soon. Don't forget, Xiaomi's working on EVs, because, you know, China's EV market's getting hot, and lots of companies are jumping in. NIO's kind of in it, BYD. Huawei sort of has a skin in the game. They are working with an EV manufacturer, and they've licensed their software out to that company. So that's another sort of battleground for these manufacturers, for these companies that have platforms and sort of have software of their own and ecosystems as EVs. And if you think about it, really, HyperOS is kind of Xiaomi's answer to HarmonyOS, pretty much for the Chinese market. And they really need a solid rival to Huawei's HarmonyOS, which has really gotten traction in China. But also, one can kind of assume that Xiaomi is kind of looking at releasing their EVs also for the global market. So this operating system could also work for the global market, potentially, not just for smartphones, but also for the IoT devices, smart TVs. I kind of can look at the whole lot, sort of, and they could be adding HyperOS to the mix. So it's pretty interesting development from Xiaomi. As someone who is a fan of Xiaomi, I'm kind of excited, honestly. Let's see what they bring to the table, what they've been cooking. Hopefully it does perform nominally faster than the recent versions of MIUI, because this has kind of been a complaint of people that MIUI is quite laggy and has a lot of bloat attached to it. And in the back end, of course, they've had lots of things in the code sort of that's been around for 8, 9, 10, 12 years, God knows when, for how long. So this could be like a fresh start, more or less. Alright, let's switch over to Apple. Let's talk about Apple. On Tuesday, the Cupertino Giant has released a new product. No, it's not a new iPad, as most people were thinking, but rather a new accessory to go to the iPads. The Apple Pencil with USB-C. That's basically what it's called. Apple Pencil USB-C with USB-C, in brackets, the last bit. And it's designed, in my opinion, it's designed for the iPad Air and the more affordable iPads, pretty much. The new $79 Apple Pencil has all the basics that you can expect, but lacks wireless charging and pressure sensitivity. So, you do, however, get magnets allowing you to snap the pencil to your iPad, like on the second gen. The second gen, though, not only you can, it's magnetic, so you can snap it to your iPad on the top, and also it charges it right away, so you don't need a charging cable. But this one, you can only charge it through a wired USB-C cable, so that's pretty interesting. No wireless charging, however, and you don't get pressure sensitivity, which is kind of a bummer, to be fair. As I said, you do, however, get magnets allowing you to snap the pencil to your iPad, as I've said earlier. Hover support, that's only on the M2 iPad Pro. If you have that, that's a pretty nifty feature and it makes it more useful. And, well, a USB-C charging port. And the way it works is, and this has sort of been shown in photos online, is you can sort of pop the cap out, slides out, and you can plug in a regular USB-C charging cable and charge it up. So that's pretty cool, and it's not like the wonky approach where the cap revealed like a USB, like a lightning cable, like a lightning port, and you had to get like a wonky adapter, and you had it in the box, and you plugged it into the iPad. It was an absolute pain in the back. But yeah, the new Apple Pencil unsurprisingly works with all the USB-C iPads, as in the press release. It costs $79 and will be available in early November. For the looks of it, it's a pretty good accessory for iPad Air and iPad Mini owners, nonetheless. Earlier this week, Mark Gurman obviously wrote his latest newsletter, the Power Up newsletter. I don't subscribe to it, unfortunately. I definitely should. It does drop lots of interesting tidbits and latest scoop about Apple and what they're up to and what they've been cooking while we've not had an event. Well, the last one was in last month, pretty much. But what they've been cooking since last month, or in the past couple of months, more or less. And we've got some interesting tidbits. Firstly is more details about the Macs and Apple Vision device, the Vision Pro, the cheaper, you can say the Vision Air as well, call it here. Apparently, according to him, quote, Apple's would-be cheaper Vision Pro will drop the outside screen and Mac-grade chip, pretty much. And that Apple sort of has set its sights on a cheaper Vision headset. Of course, they'll have to do it to get the headset to gain mainstream adoption. The Vision Pro was very expensive. The starting price, $3,500, locks it only down to enthusiasts and early adopters and nerds like myself. I probably would spend that kind of money for a headset, but for mainstream consumers, for prosumers even, it's too little too much. But now they have been looking to create a more affordable version of the Vision headset, and apparently they've even shifted focus away from standalone AR glasses because apparently it's been too technically challenging, according to Gurman himself. And but now they're sort of working on a cheaper Vision headset, and apparently it will cost $1,500 to $2,500, so around sort of still in the four-figure mark, but again under $2,500, and apparently be using lower resolution displays, a iPhone processor, which I would like to suspect is the A18 or A19 or A17 Bionic chip instead of the M series chip. Don't forget the Vision Pro comes with like the M2 along with like a dedicated processor for rendering the display, and sort of for the motion coprocessor. Along with that, apparently they'll be looking to remove the eyesight feature, the screen on the outside, so it shows the eyes of the user, and some sensors that probably will go along with it, unsurprisingly. So that's pretty interesting in a way, and apparently it'll have all the bells and whistles again, and also ditching some of those extra features, and will be smaller and lighter to wear, and should be comfortable. And apparently, according to Gurman, Apple is looking to release the Apple Vision Pro potentially before the end of April. But you can take this with a pinch of salt. It might not be end of April. It could go all the way to June even, so I wouldn't hold on that in a way. Another tidbit that he's also added here was that Apple's the M3 Max are coming. Although we've not gotten any announcement or even a press release or a keynote event for the new iPads or Macs, but Apple is working on them and kind of will release them by next year, pretty much. Apparently, a new entry-level iPad, iPad Air, and iPad Mini are in development with the faster processors. I'm suspecting the M2 series chips that are already in development, along with a new iPad Pro with revamped designs, OLED displays, faster chips, and redesigned Magic Keyboard, but won't go on sale till next year, so don't hold your breath on a new iPad Pro coming out by the end of this year. As for the Macs, according to Mark Gurman, the 14 and 16-inch MacBook Pros have reached DVT design validation testing phase, which means that they are getting ready for production, and they probably will go on sale next year, so they've already finished creating them, so they're gonna start manufacturing and it'll go on sale next year, so that's pretty cool in a way. And also, while we're at it, the MacBook Air, the 13 and 15 inch M3 Air, has already reached the engineering verification test, which means that they just need to pass some more tests, and also the first run of units will be manufactured and should go on sale by summer next year, according to Gurman. So that's pretty cool. So if you've been looking to get a new iPad or a MacBook, more or less, you might want to hold out a little bit. If you could wait a whole year, that would be great. If you've kind of gotten a more recent model, you can kind of hold on to it for another year while Apple plans to launch M3 Max and the iPad with M2 potentially. So that's pretty interesting in a way. But the last interesting tidbit that Gurman touched on was pretty interesting, and that is that Apple's apparently readying a system where if you buy an iPhone from the Apple Store, and it sometimes happens that when you get a particular iPhone, it kind of comes with like a very old version of iOS, and by the time you've bought the phone, like 6 months later or a year later, you've already gotten a whole software update or two or three software updates. And it kind of has a problem when you set the phone up and you sort of go into settings, and then you have to start sort of updating iOS, and you realize that you have to get an update to get more features. Now Apple is working on a new system that will allow it to update the iPhone's software right on the spot. And the way it works is that it'll be like a pad-like device. So you can imagine the AirPower-ish kind of device, you know, that they've had, but that's got scrapped. Like a AirPower kind of device, you can imagine it if you want to. And you place the iPhone over it. Still packed in the box, you didn't take it out or switch it on at all, just in its retail box. You press a button, or they press a button, and it automatically updates to the latest version of iOS. And then when you open the phone, you'll literally be on the latest version of iOS. I'm sure Apple is probably working on like the intricacies of it, but apparently Apple is planning to roll this out before the end of this year, which will be pretty cool. And if you're wanting to get a new iPhone and you usually get it later, not during the launch season, but rather 6 months down the line, this would be a pretty nifty feature. And for regular consumers, it'd be good to know that you'll be on the latest software as soon as you open it right out of the box. So that's pretty cool in a way, and I do hope they bring it out. It will definitely help a lot of regular casual consumers, more or less. So that's all the Apple scoop that you want to know about, pretty much. All right, Elon Musk X is testing a new subscription plan dubbed Not a Bot in New Zealand and the Philippines. Under the plan, users pay $1 a year, roughly, to be able to post, repost, like, and basically do all the functions of a normal X user, your likes and tweets and retweets and so on and so forth. If you want more features like editing tweets, for example, monetization, that everyone's known about, you can upgrade to X Premium. If you don't want to pay for Not a Bot, you'll have to use X in read-only mode, so you can only read particular users' tweets after you sign in. Now, this doesn't affect existing users, but the idea of making people pay up, the idea of making people pay up for X, paying for to tweet, roughly, is a bad idea. It's straight up a bad idea. It's counterproductive, and I really hope they don't go ahead with this. I'm sure they're testing it, and they want to see how it's like for some users, but I really hope they don't go with this, because it'll seriously hammer X, and the last thing you'd want is something very convoluted that will stop more actual people from joining or even reusing it or reactivating after a long time. So it's kind of a bad idea, more or less. Alright, before we move on and talk about more things, let's touch upon a pretty quirky gadget that I want to touch on. And it's kind of hard to find these things, but it's very fairly interesting. This is the Oukitel VP30 Pro. It's a rugged smartphone. Let's just say it's a bit of a knockoff flagship. It's got all your usual flagship specs. 108 megapixel main camera on the back, 32 megapixel selfie camera, 6.78 inch, 120Hz FHD plus display, Dimensity 850, 12 gigabytes of RAM, 512 gigabytes of storage, Android 13 support, IP68 water and dust resistance, IP69K shock resistance, potentially that should be one for shock resistance because it's a durable phone, MIL STD 810H certification, 120 watts fast charging, 11,000 mAh battery, so it lasts almost forever. But the interesting party trick of the Oukitel is a little screen on the back of the phone. Now it seems like they've ripped out the small screen of a smartwatch onto the back of the phone, onto this rugged phone, and it's pretty cool. It's like it can double as a viewfinder for the camera on the back. You display a compass, battery status, step count, notifications. It's pretty interesting it's a nifty party trick, let's just say that. And it's pretty cool. And best part, it costs $330, between $330 and $360. And it will be available on AliExpress. So if you want to get a quirky phone that has a unique party trick, you might want to check this out, the VP30 Pro. Who knows, maybe I might want to get this in for review. What do you think? That'll be fun. We should definitely contact Oukitel and try to get a review unit of the WP30 Pro. It'll be fun, more or less. So why not? No harm in trying. That is. All right, this past week was earnings season in the US, and companies like Tesla and Netflix and countless companies have reported earnings for Q3, for the third quarter of this year, and especially for Netflix, despite the Barbenheimer trend and the writer and actor strike in Hollywood, it's managed to beat analyst expectations, add new subscribers, and primarily because they've been cracking down on password sharing and have launched an ad-supported plan. But now Netflix has announced that it'll be increasing subscription prices generally this week, immediately. So if you live in the US, UK, and France, expect to pay a bit more to binge your favorite shows and movies. So in case you missed it, the new pricing plan kind of goes like this, that the basic and ad-supported plans stay the same. It's the same price. So the ad-supported plan is $7, and the basic plan is $12, roughly, $6.99 and $11.99, respectively, before taxes, and similar prices in euros and pounds. That is, and but the standard and premium plans are going up in price from what they've been. So for context, the Netflix's standard plan costs in the US around $15 a month, and the premium plan is $20 a month, and now they're going to be charging a touch bit extra for these plans. So the standard Netflix plan in the US will set you back $15.49 a month immediately if you obviously renew now, and the premium plan will set you back $22.99 per month from now. So that's pretty it's not surprising, given that one outcome of the strikes has really been, unsurprisingly, this sort of push to pay writers and actors and the producers of those show of all the shows and movies you watch a little bit more money. And it isn't surprising, given that impact, that Netflix is looking to increase prices, and also they want to become profitable because they've been in such a heavy debt load, and their competition's catching up dramatically fast. So they need to have they need to really turn a profit, and they've discontinued their DVD rental business now. And so this is the only business stream. This is the only business model, more or less, in a way. So don't be surprised if Netflix's premium plan, which is currently $23 a month in the US, ends up costing you $49 a month. It might happen, and the strikes have sort of set the stage for that to happen. The outcome, the resolutions and the agreements that will be coming, it'll sort of set the stage for all these streaming services to end up costing kind of similar to cable TV, because you know the economics are going to catch up, and users are kind of used to consume a lot of content, so they'll sort of justify the value. But don't be surprised if you end up paying more for your Netflix plan, that is. Finally, Meta has announced today that users can now have two WhatsApp accounts instead of one previously. You can now have two WhatsApp accounts on the same app concurrently. You don't need an extra app to do this. You don't need some extra app or login to WhatsApp web. You can completely do it from the one main WhatsApp app on your phone. That is, in order to use this feature, you'll need a second number or a phone with dual SIM support, physical or dual or eSIM, and you can set up a second account within your main WhatsApp on your phone. Although it came too late, it'll come in handy for users like probably yourselves and myself, especially use WhatsApp, which is apparently the most popular messaging app out there, except for Americans. You know, for some reason, Americans still like to use iMessage and SMS. Come on, guys, wake up. Switch to WhatsApp. It's run by an American company after all. Anyways, it's kind of surprising. I mean, the rest of the world uses Telegram, Signal, WhatsApp, and there's a reason why it's popular around the world. We don't like to pay for SMS, and we surely don't like blue and green bubbles, that is. So we've not been worried about RCS and all that nonsense that Google's been pushing, and Apple and all. I mean, if you go outside the United States exclusively, we really don't give a damn about green bubbles, blue bubbles. It's all hyperbole. For context, I kind of talk to my friends and colleagues and folks, you know, and some of my friends and those I know happen to have an iPhone, some have Android, so we honestly, this is a non-issue, this non-starter issue outside of the US. We just happen to use WhatsApp, so yeah. But it's pretty cool to have, to be able to use two WhatsApp numbers on one phone. That's definitely a unique feature, that is. Alright, we've reached the end of this week's episode. What do you think of everything you've heard so far? Let me know. I'm on Instagram, TikTok, and X at Said_Maon99. Follow me there if you can. Subscribe if you're listening right now. Leave a review on Apple and Spotify. Don't forget to donate to the Gaza relief effort. All the links are in the show notes in case you missed it. I'll also be sure to post on my Instagram and X, so you definitely don't miss that. But yeah, till next week, this is your Bo Maon signing out. Where we are, what are you up to? Stay safe, folks, and thank you very much for listening. All right, ciao.